making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So you knew this had to happen today. You had to know that during Trump's I don't even know what to call it. It was an NFL celebration without the players. It was a celebration of the championship Philadelphia Eagles without the Eagles being there. Because evidently they kneeled. And evidently they weren't patriotic Americans. So punishment for them. We've uninvited you there. Turns out two guys actually kneeled during the playing of the national anthem at today's thing. And the first thing I thought when I saw it is off to Guantanamo with them. That's the future of things in our country. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on maybe that and maybe Trump should have shot Comey. Who knows? I've asked our good friend Sarah Kendzior to come share some of her thoughts. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So what do you think? A couple of guys knelt during the national anthem today. Off to Guantanamo with them?
Oh, I think that's wishful thinking but on Trump's part. But, yeah, I haven't found out too much about who those guys are. But, you know, Trump, he likes to just basically take advantage of these situations, sort of cultural things, sports things, these, like, matters of spectacle in order to try to flaunt power. But I think in this case, it just really backfired.
It was really kind of sad. I mean, and pathetic. The fact that he comes out yesterday and the wording of, did you read the wording of his uninvite?
No, I didn't see it.
It was really just kind of, you know, like a 2-year-old having a tantrum. Says, well, since you're not going to do it, we're going to take this away. And I'm going, I don't know that they really wanted to come to begin with.
Yeah. So standard procedure, I would think. I mean, that's the thing is, it's at this point, it's getting repetitive. It's getting old, and I think that kind of the shock value of the way that he's treated, dissenting athletes, dissenting entertainers, and so forth, has kind of diminished. Which is why, you know, there wasn't the kind of outcry you saw last year with the NFL, and that's bad in one sense because it's a sign of normalization. But on the other hand, you know, I think we have very severe problems in terms of abuse of executive power, in terms of how, immigrants and people seeking asylum are being treated. So, you know, it's good in a way if this doesn't dominate the conversation. So,
yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things that makes you go, not surprised at all, but it is where we are. But, you know, the thing is, I was just reading a New York Times article this morning that, you know, it said that Trump and his lawyers have embraced this vision of vast executive power. And I'm going, now you're reporting on that?
Embrace the vision, too. Not Trump is emulating the tactics of a dictator and actually has the capacity in executive office to enact them because he doesn't have any pushback from the levers of Congress that our founding fathers devised to, you know, prevent this exact situation from happening, but has embraced a new vision of executive power. I mean, it's just amazing. I saw another headline, that framed it in a similar way. Like, he had some grand new idea. Like, he's literally announcing his autocracy in advance, and he's been doing it the entire time. Like, every time he ran for president in the past, he did this. Throughout his presidential campaign in 2016, he did this. He basically was, you know, ticking off, if there's like a checklist of signs of impending dictatorship, he was doing it. And then when he gets in office, he enacts them. And so now we're down to kind of the final straw, which is, you know, do we have a president or do we have a king? And he's basically coming out and saying, you know, yes, actually, you're going to have a king. You're not going to have any kind of accountability. You're not going to have any sway over the decisions I make. I'm going to define the law. I am synonymous with the law. You know, this is the sort of stuff like Daniel Webster wrote screeds about in the 1830s when Andrew Jackson was in power. I mean, it's tyrannical. And the New York Times, because they're his court stenographers, of course, just see it as, you know, oh, an interesting and quaint new vision we've got going on. So, yeah, screw that.
Yeah, I'm with you. But here's the thing. I mean, they're the failing New York Times. I mean, you would think, you know, after being beat up and humiliated that, you know, they would stop this already. Or is this some kind of media version of...
This is a fake feud.
Yeah, but, you know, is this some kind of media version of Stockholm Syndrome or something?
There's a little bit of that going on. There is some denial. I think that people, you know, some in the press don't want to admit how bad this is, how serious this is, because when this leads to its end conclusion, you end up with no free press. And so all these people who think that they're, you know, jumping on the Trump train, which happens to be for them a gravy train, you know, in the end are just going to find themselves out of a job, unable to speak freely, et cetera, if this is all followed to its natural conclusion. But, you know, I wouldn't apply this to the media in general, but the Times, you know, feuds, this whole failing New York Times stuff is absolute nonsense. Like, I think there are some people at the Times who are doing good work, who've been consistently doing good work, and then there are some who have been consistently doing little but enabling Trump and his administration to get away with corruption by creating this kind of spectacle, by creating this court intrigue. And, you know, Trump, when he tweets about someone, you know, occasionally you see real flashes of anger. I think this is particularly true when he's targeting somebody in a racist way. I think that those tweets of anger are sincere. Other times, he basically targets people who he would like you to read. And the reason he targets them is to give this kind of sense of objectivity. Like, if I'm attacking them, then what they say must be true. And so if, you know, the New York Times comes out and says, either in an op-ed that Trump is not so bad, or they say, or they have some sort of article about internal disputes in the administration that imply that power is not being consolidated, that's beneficial for him. And there are people listening probably now thinking, you know, Trump's not smart enough to do that. Trump's a moron. He's incapable of it. This isn't chess. And it's like, fine, it's not chess. It's charades. And Trump has been playing it extremely well for 40 years. He has the New York press, you know, by the, I'm trying to think of another
the
word.
The short hairs. We'll go with short hairs.
Yes, by the short hairs. And so, and he always has. You can go back and look at how he treated, especially the tabloid press, but also the Times, in the 80s, in the 90s, planting stories, pretending to be his own publicist, and controlling them. He has all this gossip on them. He has all this blackmail on them. And given that there's, you know, sexual predators like Glenn Thrush working at some of these organizations, I would think that would give some extra leverage for the Trump team. And so that's just a bad situation. And I'm not surprised that they would kind of paint what's an extremely illegal abuse of power in a semi-favorable light.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was saying it all during the campaign that, you know, don't discount this guy. He was somebody who for, you know, decades dominated the New York media market, and that's not easy to do.
Yeah, and I think if the New York media market did not dominate the national media market, we might not have this problem. You know, and there's a strange paradox, because I actually think people from New York, like everyday citizens of New York, are among the best informed people in the country on Trump. They're particularly people, you know, over the age of 40 who grew up with the New York press back when it would actually report on all of Trump's bankruptcies, corruption, scandals, et cetera. They learned all this stuff. They knew he was a con artist. They knew he was full of it, and they didn't back him. But the media is not the same as the people, and they're very much in his pocket. I think some of it is for financial reasons. I think some of it's out of fear, and I think some of it is out of, you know, an ideological kind of matchup on certain issues, particularly related to race. And, you know, that's a little bit frightening. And again, this is not true of everyone in the Times. I think in particular, they've had very good reporting on the environment and on Pruitt and environmental issues and all this other stuff. But it's concerning. You know, they have too much influence. And people are always asking me, like, what should I read? And I really think just dismiss institutions out of hand. Like, look at the individual reporters at these places. Like, are they doing good work? Are they reliable? Are they honest? Does it stand up over time? Do they seem to have an agenda? Don't worry about which paper it is. Although, I mean, there's some places like Fox News where, quite honestly, like, you're not going to find an objective party except for maybe Shepard Smith or something. But, you know, but for everybody else, just kind of look at the individual articles, individual reporters, and don't think, oh, it's the New York Times, it's so prestigious, it must be good, because that's really just not the case anymore.
No, and they should also read your New York Times best-selling book, View from Flyover Country.
Yeah, they have an excellent bestseller list. I highly recommend that. But yeah, everything else, though, just, you know, line your birdcage or whatever.
But here's the thing. I mean, and, you know, I look at, you know, as you've said, you know, this, they're moving in this and at light speed in this kind of, you know, taking over in this autocratic fashion, and there's no one to stop them. And I look at, you know, today the report came out that evidently some reporters asked Ted Cruz about if Trump can pardon himself, and it took him exactly 18 seconds to say nothing. And then he claims later that, you know, well, I just ignored the question. And this is this is really a perfect example of what the Republicans who control both houses are not doing anything to help us or stop him.
Oh, yeah. No, I felt like Ted Cruz was like practicing for his confirmation hearing or something, where he's going to be, you know, potentially asked some difficult question by a Democrat and, you know, abetting treason or corruption or something, and decides to give a long pause. But yeah, I mean, it's pathetic. I mean, Ted Cruz is in particular so pathetic. He's somebody who it just blows my mind. Like, someone goes after your wife, they go after your dad, they go after you in this really personal way, they humiliate you, they say you're the Zodiac killer, and then you go and kiss their ass. Like, I'm never going to get past these men. Like, they just have no pride. Like, they have no dignity, no self-respect. You know, they also have no loyalty to country. They have no decency. You know, they're failing miserably at their jobs. But aside from that, you know, I almost don't respect, you know, I don't expect that from Republicans anymore. I don't expect any kind of good governance. But I definitely expect them to be prideful and self-serving, and they can't even do that.
No,
it's,
I mean, you're
kind of stymied, you know.
No, you're right on. I mean, I you know, but again, I mean, this isn't new. I mean, I you know, not beating out upon John McCain, but you know, I remember 2000, and you know, how John McCain turned around and supported Bush is well beyond me after the South Carolina push poll.
Yes, after they went after his kid.
Yep.
I don't get it. It's like some things are just not forgivable. You know, you can have a debate and exchange some nasty words, whatever. You go after somebody's family, it's like, I mean, I don't want to give Trump credit for anything, but he sort of seems to understand that. Like, you know, it's probably an extension of his mafia mindset. You know, you don't go after family, but, you know, seriously, like, people should kind of maybe learn a thing or two from that. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just embarrassing. It's embarrassing for all of them.
Except for Ted Cruz and yeah, you know, and, you know, the ugly wife or whatever the argument was there. But, you know, here's the thing, and this is what bothers me. You're right. There seems to be no courage in that party to hold. I know they talk about country. They love to wrap themselves in the flag. They love to take the photo ops with all of the soldiers and all that. But it appears they would sell all of that under the, for a nickel and a way out the door.
Yeah, I mean, they're completely spineless. You know, that's why, you know, this is a side of how upside down everything is. We had the pleasant surprise in Missouri of the Republican Party actually growing a spine and standing up against Greitens, who is this sort of like mini Trump in training, and saying, no, you know, we're not going to stand for it. And they're continuing to invest his corruption. And so that's been interesting to watch, because my whole, you know, well, for the whole history of Missouri, Missouri's been kind of ahead of the curve, whether it's in terms of American prosperity or America's decline. And so if the direction we're going is, you know, oh, we're finally going to, you know, clamp down on our tyrants, then I would hope that maybe we are the bellwether state again, and that'll extend to the nation. But it's also novel. I was like, wow, you know, someone's actually semi being held accountable, not completely. And Republicans are actually doing the right thing, and there's actually a bipartisan consensus. Now, imagine if we had this on a national level. Gee, like, wouldn't that be nice? But,
yeah, but
I don't really see it coming.
But Sarah, I mean, what this guy was accused of was pretty despicable. I mean, you know, this is one of those things that, you know, at the bottom of the barrel, I don't know how anyone rational, sane, I don't know how you defend that or defend inaction. Although, I got to be honest, we've got a state representative here in Pennsylvania who evidently threatened another state representative, a woman with a gun who was going to break up with him, threatened to kill her, and I guess, you know, threatened another one, and there's a whole bunch of stuff. He's still in the state house, not running for re-election. But the Republicans here are cowardice as well. So I guess,
right,
I shouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I mean, they usually these days just kind of gather around their own. And, you know, initially when Trump first kind of appeared, that's what they were doing. You know, they were attacking him. And then it was just this gradual, like, one by one, they began to fall. And then they began to act very afraid. And, you know, Trump has committed a lot of the same offenses that Greitens did. And I think he's committed ones that are, you know, much, much more serious and certainly in a much greater position of power and for multiple decades. And so you would think, you know, there's plenty of room to walk away. Like, that's what's so bizarre is it's like the Republicans were waiting for an opening, and then they would, like, get one. They'd get the Access Hollywood video, or they would get Charlottesville, or they would get Trump threatening to nuke North Korea. And it's like, okay, guys, like, you can walk away now, and I think that the majority of the American public is going to understand why, and they just don't. You get, like, 24 hours of a conscience, and it disappears.
No, I mean, you know, what's bothering me is, you know, all of this stuff has now become normal. You know, I've got people now, they're like, I don't even pay attention anymore. It's so crazy. I don't even care.
Yeah.
And that's the scary part of all of this is that we've now normalized it. Because, you know, and yeah. I go back to Giuliani's comments. I've actually had people say, you know, it's probably true. Trump probably could have shot Comey and he'd have gotten less slack than he's gotten here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that whole, you know, I can shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and, you know, voters would still have my back. I mean, that's accurate, but not just for voters, you know, but for how the media treats him, how the GOP treats him, how law enforcement treats him. You know, he knows this. And it's extremely frustrating. I mean, we're forgetting that, like, he had a fire in his building that due to the fact that he had no alarm, no sprinkler system, like no safety precautions, a man did die on Fifth Avenue because of Donald Trump. He burned to death in his building. And this guy's father was friends with Trump. He like hung out with him in Mar-a-Lago. There are all these pictures. And Trump never expressed condolences, never took responsibility. I mean, if this was any other president, you know, this would be in the paper. I mean, first of all, the fact that Trump hasn't divested from his business interests and still has this tower would have been a problem. But then someone goes and dies in it, and that's not an issue. And, you know, we spent all of the last few weeks kind of wondering what the hell was happening with Melania. And I kept thinking, like, what will happen if she emerges and it's clear, you know, she was beaten? Or, like, what if she, you know, died? And I want to be very clear that this is not anything I wish for in either circumstance. Like, I want her to be well, no matter what anyone feels about someone. They don't deserve to be beaten. They certainly should not be murdered. So this is not some sort of, you know, I hope this happens or fantasy in that sense. But I kept thinking, how would the press cover it? Like, if they knew, would they tell us? Or would it just be like, you know, oh, well, we don't really need first ladies, or she didn't play a big role anyway, or, you know, maybe she wasn't that. I mean, like, I kept thinking they're going to rationalize it, they're going to deny it, and that started to freak me out, was just imagining that potential press reaction, devoid of any commitment to reality, devoid of any compassion, devoid of any desire to inform, and, you know, I don't know quite what her status is now. I mean, I guess she's out there, allegedly.
Yes,
and
she's
okay,
somewhere. But it would be like, kind of, I think they would just bring in a replacement. And, you know, we would, you know, I guess there was a TV show back in the 60s, Bewitched, where they brought in a whole new husband,
right.
and it was the same guy. It was a different guy,
like
same
the
role.
Becky's on Roseanne, you know?
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, it was Bewitched.
Yeah, I mean.
That's the thing, and I feel like half a good chunk of the media, especially Fox News, would just lie. They would just be like, oh, yeah, that's Melania. And we'd all be like, no, it's not. It's a totally different person. And they'd be like, no, what are you talking about? And it would just be this, like, epic gaslighting. It would be, like, the biggest gaslighting of all time. And it's the kind of thing that happens in dictatorships constantly. Like, it kept bringing me back to when Uzbekistan's president died. And he died, like, 4 days before they officially announced it, but everyone knew he died because they were getting ready for the funeral and doing all this stuff. They kept saying he was alive, and people were sending him greetings and well wishes on the Independence Day, and it was just the most surreal thing to see play out. And the whole time this was going on, I was like, God, that could happen here. Like, we're actually at that point where our climate, our political climate, our media climate has deteriorated to such a level that I could actually envision that happening here. That's, you know, that freaks me out.
No, it's really crazy. And but again, you know, I would not be surprised by it at all. But, you know, the questions then become, you know, how do we hold them accountable? You know, a lot of people have a lot of faith in this Mueller investigation, which I got to be honest, I'm not so certain. I'm a little leery. I'm a little afraid, maybe, that this, you know, is kind of a big, you know, maybe he can pardon himself. Who knows?
Yeah.
But, you know, you look at this and you start asking a bunch of questions because, look, I don't think the founders really ever envisioned a narcissistic leader like this who wanted to consolidate party power and a party that would allow it to happen. I don't think they ever really dreamt that as a possibility. But here we are.
Yeah, they didn't envision that it would not be checked. I mean, they certainly anticipated a tyrant, because that's what they were reacting to. They didn't envision this kind of obsequiousness. I also don't think they envisioned the kind of international system, which has its own sort of, you know, sets of checks and balances that are like a counteract to the ones that we have here, where, you know, the Trump administration is propped up by so many hostile actors overseas. There's so much, you know, manipulation of our political system from outside, you know, and from bad people within. And, you know, I think this whole thing of Trump saying he can't pardon himself, that he can pardon himself, is just something he's going to repeat over and over and over again until the shock value wears off and until it starts to sound true or even reasonable to parts of the population. And I certainly think he's going to go for it. He's going to try. And people really need to step up and not just say, no, you can't do that, because they've been saying that all along. They said that about, you know, you need to divest, you need to release your tax returns, you need to stop assaulting women, and you need to confess to that. You need to be honest about your relationship with Russia. And he just ignores that. I mean, he doesn't care. And so people need to take greater action. And I think the kind of action he responds to is indictments. And so I'm kind of waiting to see what happens with the Mueller probe, with Manafort. I think Trump's tweets and his pardons have been a clearer sign that he's willing to pardon anybody involved in this investigation, so long as they stay loyal to him, so long as they don't rat him out as an individual. And I think that, you know, his circle understands that, and they'll find that attractive, and that might be a really horrifying situation. You know, as I've been saying all along, I don't think that they moved fast enough. I think they needed to stop this before he got in, because once you get in, it's very hard to get them out.
Yeah, I mean, that's the scary thing. Any thoughts on the Mueller team wanting to revoke the bail of Manafort, because evidently they claim he's a witness, but allegedly tampering with witnesses?
Oh, I mean, I totally believe he's tampering with witnesses, because he can't stop. He's like a crime machine. Like, of course he's going to commit crime. And this is like, I think I had a conversation with you about this, because they had Manafort and Gates, and they were going to, like, just let them out and roam around. I think they're going to let Gates go on a spring trip to Boston and announce it. And I'm like, one, someone might kill you. Two, you're a flight risk. And that's true of Manafort. And there are always these very lax conditions applied to somebody who, you know, has been involved in international crime for multiple decades in terms of Manafort that I thought were really inappropriate. And to be clear, you know, judges decide the terms in a lot of these cases. It's not just Mueller. But I'm like, dude, you know, you need to keep Manafort locked up, because he's going to mess with the case. He's possibly going to try to kill people. Like, you got to watch him. And so, you know, at least he was watched, and of course he went and did something like this. You know, he's intimidating, or, you know, trying to tamper with witnesses. You know, this is the guy who got caught trying to change a Word document into a PDF with compromising information in it. So in many ways, you know, on one hand, you could be like, okay, he's not the brightest bulb. I don't think that's really true. I actually think he's very smart, but I think that he's been acting with such impunity for such a long time. He's been just breaking laws left and right all over the world, assuming he'll get out of it, that he just doesn't kind of care. And so I am curious, if they actually do put him behind bars, maybe that will finally have some sort of effect on him in terms of, you know, cooperation, in terms of, you know, his behavior. I mean, I don't know. I'm inclined to think he won't flip. I'm inclined to think he's a kind of omerta guy who, you know, like, just will stick to the code, but also is probably really terrified of the outside world and all these different international players who would like to kill him. So, you know, I don't think he'll cooperate, but I still would be really happy if he's behind bars.
Oh, and where he should be, because if it were you or me or heaven forbid, a black guy, behind bars without question.
Yeah, I read about some teenager today who, like, stole a pair of sneakers and got 5 years in prison. And I'm just thinking about Manafort on house arrest with his multiple homes and his boats and all this stuff. And I'm just like, this country, man. Like, I don't know. It's just so disgusting.
Well, it's like the poor black guy in Philadelphia. A homeless guy stole 3 peppermint patties, spent 555 days waiting for a mental health treatment center to open up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just plain nuts.
Vile. It's absolutely vile.
Just vile. Yeah. Before I let you go, I have to get your thoughts on the whole Samantha Bee, Roseanne racist tweet thing. Any thoughts?
I mean, distraction. I don't know. I'm so sick of hearing about Roseanne. It's like, when ABC hired Roseanne, obviously this is going to happen, because Roseanne's Twitter account has been like this for several years. And, you know, I watched the show. I actually didn't think the show was bad. But this was like a train wreck waiting to happen. And so my guess is they wanted to cancel it for some other reason, like probably Roseanne being a giant pain in the ass to work with. And this gave them, you know, a reason. And then, you know, what we're seeing now is this kind of like backlash where you see the conservatives being like, oh, they got Roseanne. We have to get one of theirs. And so they're going after Samantha Bee or they're going after Joy Reid. And it's like very obvious and very deliberate and very ludicrous. And, you know, I don't know. I'm mostly like ignoring it because I just think there's bigger problems at hand. But it is indicative of like a really silly mentality, like a real, you know, team-based partisan mentality. I don't think most of the country shares it. I think most people are kind of like, you know, wow, we are having a trade war with Canada and I just lost my job and, you know, thinking about things like that. But the media does love it. So
yeah, trade war with Canada was not what we were told during the election. Now, look, I'm not against the idea of a trade war with China. I think at some point you've got to stop, you know, just getting, you know, decimated by their mercantilist policies and how they've been just stealing industry after industry. But with Canada, really?
Yeah, who goes after Canada? Like, what kind of nut job, you know, targets Canada? Like, now we know. But, you know, it's really bad. Like, my state's affected by this. My state's affected by all these trade wars. And, you know, I think that people, like, they keep saying, oh, out there, they won't even know who's responsible. I mean, people know. People know who's responsible for this. And I'm embarrassed as an American because, you know, Canada's our friend and Canada does not deserve this. And I felt weird watching that video with Trudeau where he was like, you know, American people, you are not the enemy or whatever. And I'm like, oh my God, like this is the kind of thing that the U.S. used to send, you know, to countries that were living under totalitarian regimes. And now we get them. So that's, I guess, just where we are.
Oh, when I saw that, I thought John Bolton was probably in the Oval Office going, we need to bomb them right now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no limit. I mean, Trump has talked about that. He's talked about, you know, for years, dropping nukes on our allies. He wanted to nuke France. Like, you can find a 1987 interview he did where he thought they just kind of deserted. He also wanted to nuke Pakistan. And so there's not a lot of logic. Like, he's very isolationist. He sees everybody as his enemy. It doesn't matter if they're our long-term friend or ally. I think that actually makes it more tempting for him. He's like, ooh, you know, how far can we push this country before they just say, you know, screw it? Like, that's his psychology. But in terms of his relationship with Russia, like, that's a very advantageous thing for Russia to have. And if they were, for example, looking to groom an asset, that would be a quality that would really stand out to them where they would say, huh, you know, if this guy was president, he'd intentionally isolate the United States from all of their allies. And we can probably manipulate him into doing so with money or ego or other methods. So, you know, I don't think it's a coincidence that this benefits Putin in a lot of ways.
Yeah, you're right. Sarah, I appreciate the time, the thoughts. Always great talking with you. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you.
Good stuff. Our good friend Sarah Kendzior. Most certainly check out her book, New York Times bestseller, The View from Flyover Country. We'll get a link out of how you can pick that up. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show.
For the rest of us, Rick Smith.